court appointed is meant to be for entertainment purposes and basic legal information only.
Nothing in this podcast should be considered as legal representation nor legal advice.
Only use the knowledge presented herein to dazzle your friends or possibly win bar trivia. Two Dudes Perspective on Legal Frivolity. I'm your co-host, Mike Meadows. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurl. And I am just a dude.
Tommy, before we get this party started, I think we have we need to call an expert witness to the stand.
Yes, we do have an expert witness on hand today. As a matter of fact, we have 1.5 expert witnesses.
I guess that's true.
We would like to welcome Miss Sydney Smurl McElroy.
Hi.
Yes.
Yeah, Mrs. Sydney Smurl McElroy.
She didn't spend 4 years in medical school to be called Mrs.
Dr. Sydney Smurl McElroy.
And that qualifies her as an expert
She's always my little bean. I don't think of her as Dr. Bean. I just think of her as Bean.
Dr. Bean.
Yeah.
They don't call me that at work very much.
I wonder why not. They don't have pet names there.
Paging Dr. Bean. Paging Dr. Bean.
At least doctor's still there. I guess I'll take it.
Well, that's good. Well, Sydney, we're glad to have you with us.
Well, thank you for having
me. We appreciate
you
being here.
Yeah, thanks for being on the show. We were sitting here talking beforehand, and we thought maybe you had been on the show, but you actually have never been on Court Appointed. We did the crossover episode where Justin was on Court Appointed, and then
I was on Sawbones. But we didn't have you here. We have had Riley and Taylor here.
So it's about time.
That's right.
I'm really the best of the three of us, so...
You are the oldest.
Well, like I told Taylor and I told Riley.
We think you're the best, but don't tell the other two. It'll hurt their feelings.
Don't tell them.
And they don't listen, so they'll never hear this.
All right. Okay, I see how this works now.
What happens in the studio stays in the studio, unless you download it to your iPhone and then it goes everywhere.
And I said 1.5 because for any of our listeners that don't know, we're expecting our second grandchild.
That's
and
right.
And she's expecting her second child, coincidentally.
Yeah. Well, that makes sense.
Well, that math adds up.
Yeah. It's just like, you know, some great person once said, if your mother doesn't have any children, you probably won't either.
Well, that's true, Dad. It's the
head scratcher. So we thought we would call Sydney to the stand today because she has some expert knowledge on a topic that Tommy and I really want to talk about.
That's right. We've been dying to talk about it.
We have been.
Yeah.
And that's...
We had to get vaccinated so we wouldn't die.
We want to talk about vaccinations and vaccines. And who better but Dr. Sydney McElroy.
Because there's a legal perspective and a medical perspective. So why not combine the two? You get two thoughts in one.
It's a twofer.
Well, I'm excited to talk about it because vaccines are something that I feel very strongly about. So,
I think when we first started doing Court Appointed, somebody posted something. I couldn't find it. I looked for it. But they said they should have called our podcast Law Bones.
Law Bones?
Law Bones at Law. So, I was like, that's good.
So we should call this episode Law Bones.
Yeah, there you go. Law Bones. That's true.
Whoever said that, I apologize. I couldn't find the name, but that was a good one.
I'll have to remember that when I'm making up the title.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, because we basically said, you know, we didn't make any bones about it. We said, well, we thought that Sawbones was such a good, you know, way of format that we'd just do the same format, but from the legal perspective.
Sure. The expert and the dude.
Yeah, that's what they are. Export and the dude.
Hey, that's fine. That's like the highest form of flattery, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's why Justin and I can't do a crossover together because we're both just dudes. We don't know nothing. He'd be there goofing and I'd be here doing dad jokes and we wouldn't get anywhere.
Well, now, if we were really qualifying Sydney as an expert witness on a stand, there would be a whole series of questions you have to ask if the other side doesn't stipulate that she would be an expert.
This is true.
So basically, you have to qualify as an expert. You might even go through her her CV and determine what her qualifications were, what her publications were, things like that. And then you'd ask the court to make a determination whether or not she was an expert.
Do you have your CV up to date?
Probably not. I thought my goal was to avoid ever being an expert witness. Isn't that what I try to do?
No, expert witnesses get paid well.
I know, but...
As long as you give them the conclusion they want.
You want to avoid being a fact witness, because that means that you saw something that you have to testify that you actually saw.
In medicine, I just try to avoid being any kind of witness in any kind of trial at all.
There you go. Now, it's called the
Sergeant Schultz method.
The standard in
I know nothing.
The standard for admitting an expert in federal court is called a Daubert standard, and so that's like one of the tests. So,
Daubert,
not Dilbert.
Oh, that would be a pretty low standard if it was a Dilbert standard.
Dillweed. Do you like Mondays? Do you like lasagna?
That's Garfield.
That's the Garfield standard. Sorry. Yeah.
So anyway. Dilbert's gone downhill lately. I don't know what's happened, but he's gone downhill. He's just not funny anymore. Something happened. It used to be my favorite comic.
His tie got too short.
It could be.
The creator's kind of a dillweed, though, right?
Yeah. Well, he went off the rails there. Yeah, he had some kind of meltdown or something. I don't know.
What's his position on vaccinations? Do we know?
I don't know. I know a lot of his questionable political beliefs, but I don't know his position on vaccinations.
Speaking of vaccinations.
hey, that would be a good topic. Why don't we do vaccinations?
So, Sid, there are some laws on the books regarding mandatory vaccinations. I'm going to get into what they are and whatnot, but the one thing I thought about is the reason we have some of these on the books is probably for the public policy reasons, because whenever there's a law, I always try to figure out what the public policy reasoning is behind it, because usually there's got to be some reason why we pass this law.
Mm-hmm.
My thought would be that it might be because of herd immunity.
That's exactly right. So for any given, it's a little different for every disease, but we can accept that if a certain percentage of the population has been vaccinated against that disease, then it's very unlikely that within that population you'll have an outbreak. And that number is a little different depending on which kind of virus or bacteria or whatever we're talking about.
Okay.
So the idea would be that if we can make it mandatory vaccination, then we will be able to reach that percentage within a given population, because there are always going to be some people who, for medical reasons, can't get vaccines.
Right.
And if we can reach that threshold, then everybody will be protected against the disease, even if they didn't get vaccinated. So that's the concept of herd immunity. And that's why a lot of times people will say, well, I never got vaccinated. But like, for instance, people who kind of now will defer the chickenpox vaccine, that's a common one that I'll hear people want to try to not get, because they're like, well, chickenpox wasn't that bad. I don't want to get the chickenpox vaccine. Who cares if I get chickenpox? And then a lot of them will say, and I never even got chickenpox. So see, I didn't need it.
Yeah.
They're probably protected now by the fact that almost everybody gets the chickenpox vaccine in this country. So
unless two people that didn't get the vaccination get together, then they got the possibility of infecting each other.
Sure. And somebody has to have chickenpox to begin with. But
that's true.
Yeah. So, yeah, exactly right. Herd immunity is why it's so important, so that all of us are protected, and that, most importantly, people who can't get vaccines for some reason or another are protected as well.
Now, what would be maybe a medical reason why somebody couldn't get a vaccination?
There are different immunodeficiencies that would prevent certain people from getting vaccines, or people who are on certain kinds of treatments, like, you know, chemotherapies or things like that, who would be more vulnerable. There are people who are just allergic to some vaccines. So there aren't a ton of reasons why you can't, but there are very important, you know, real medical reasons why people absolutely can never get certain vaccines.
How would you find out if somebody was allergic to something in a certain vaccination before getting it?
Unfortunately, a lot of times we don't find out until afterwards.
Oh, really?
Now, there are some things where, and this is not 100%, but like the influenza vaccine, for instance, is usually prepared in eggs. So if you're allergic to chicken eggs, also have an allergy to the influenza vaccine. So sometimes we can know, but unfortunately, a lot of the time, the way we find out that you're allergic to a vaccine is you get it. That's very uncommon.
It's uncommon. This falls under the whole doctrine of the good far outweighs any possible bad.
Exactly. And that's, you know, a lot of the times people are receiving these vaccines, with the exception of a few that they kind of give out in the community at pharmacies and whatnot. But most of the time you're in a doctor's office when you're getting them.
Right.
So you're somewhere.
The responses are almost immediate then if you get one?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. That would be the concern. Unless it's something mild, like you can have a delayed reaction that, you know, your arm's sore, you get some redness, some swelling. But
your tongue sweats?
your tongue sweats?
That's a thing, isn't it?
A sweaty tongue?
Yeah.
Well, you want to have a sweaty tongue, otherwise you got a dry tongue.
That's probably a response too, isn't it? A dry tongue? I got dry tongue.
That just means you're sleeping with your mouth open.
To some medicine.
Or hanging your head out the window or something.
A swollen tongue is what we don't want.
Oh, is that a bad one?
Yeah. Because then we're worried about an anaphylactic reaction. That's really the only thing that would be very dangerous or life-threatening would be if you have an anaphylactic response.
Like your throat closing up? Is that essentially what
exactly.
that means?
Exactly.
Well, there is a certain percentage that does occur when they take it, and that's probably because there was something in the vaccine they were allergic to?
Yes. Yeah. But again, it's very uncommon, and it's so uncommon we don't consider it a reason not to get the vaccine, because a lot of the things we're vaccinating people against can kill you. So
yeah, and it's not like you're in the middle of the Congo getting a vaccine with no medical attention anywhere near you.
Sure,
you're in a doctor's office or somewhere when you get it too. So mm-hmm. that probably downplays any kind of risk associated with it as well, I would think.
Exactly. Yeah.
So you go in anaphylactic shock, may hit you with the EpiPen or whatever. Huh?
Right. And again, I can't. Not that I've been practicing that long. I'm still kind of young, but I can't ever remember seeing a case of an anaphylactic response to a vaccine in my practice or in my colleagues' practice or on my service, or I haven't heard of that. There's a whole system for reporting adverse events from vaccines to the CDC. They keep track of that. Exactly. So they keep track of all that. And I mean, if they become common enough, they may stop recommending something, but that's not happened so far.
One of the things I read with those, though, is a lot of times people don't know that that's what caused it. So they don't know to fill out a report and do that. So they're not sure how good those statistics are.
It is hard to know. Yeah.
I read something where one doctor said that if someone comes in with certain types of symptoms, one of their first questions is, are their vaccines up to date?
Mm-hmm.
And then said a lot of times if it is something that caused that, the response is, oh, well, yeah, they just got their vaccines yesterday. Then they know to look at that as why that might have happened.
Yeah. Sure. That's true. And it is a good point that it is hard to, because it can be a different timing. I mean, if somebody has an anaphylactic response, it probably happens pretty quickly. But there are a lot of other more mild reactions that might not happen right away.
Sweaty palms.
There you go.
Well, the sweaty business.
You're really into sweating.
You sweat a lot? You got to have something to cover it up or something?
It's a little warm in here today.
Maybe you're having a reaction to something. Did you get a vaccination?
No, but I did have a Duclaw Brewing Sweet Baby Jesus.
Well, Sweet Baby Jesus, they usually don't make you sweat. They usually make you calm.
Yeah, it's pretty good beer. So now, like I said, whenever you have laws, you always want to look at the public policy reason. So I think the public policy reason for these kinds of laws that force people to have vaccinations or have their children vaccinated is because it's better for the entire populace if these are done.
Yes.
So, and limiting certain circumstances, like medical reasons, like you said, is kind of a good reason not to have it, especially. But for the most part, there's not really a good reason not to have it.
No, there really isn't. Unless you're somebody who you've seen a doctor and they've told you you can't get XYZ vaccines for these reasons, I don't know why you wouldn't.
Yeah. Now, the thing is, there's no actual federal law regarding vaccinations. It's essentially something that's been left up to the states. Now, my thought is that it's something that could be possibly under the purview of the federal system, because there's one law, or there's one thing in particular called the Commerce Clause in the Constitution, and basically
he's the one that runs the finances for Santa at the North Pole, Commerce Clause.
It's pretty timely with the season too.
Yeah,
that's good, Dad.
That's our Christmas joke.
And so whenever something is affects interstate commerce, it can fall under the Commerce Clause, and that basically gives the federal government the authority to regulate it. So that was just an idea I had, that because it has been applied very broadly in the past, up until I think it was 86 with U.S. v. Lopez, they started kind of shrinking it a little bit. For the most part, though, it's been, if anything is basically related to interstate commerce, then it is something that the Constitution allows the government to get in that area. So I decided to do a bit of research, and actually it was actually discussed at one point in a Supreme Court case, which was kind of interesting. I found it. And the issue came up during oral arguments in NFIB versus Sebelius. I guess that's how you say it, Sebelius. And Justice Breyer asked an attorney named Michael Carvin if the federal government could mandate inoculation against some sort of epidemic.
Mm-hmm.
And he basically, the attorney said no. And he said it was based on a case called Morrison. And the Morrison case was essentially talking about whether or not the Commerce Clause applied to domestic violence. And so I think it's kind of a little bit a different area.
Yeah, well, it's got nothing to do with domestic violence.
Well, domestic violence is similar to maybe an epidemic, because it is something that can kind of spread, and it, you got to nip it in the bud, so to speak, because it is documented to show, like, it kind of it breeds upon itself, I think. So there, I can see that kind of related.
Only angle I could think on that is if you considered it like child abuse, that you didn't vaccinate your children and you were subjecting them then to the possibility of these diseases.
Well, but the whole basis is that it has to touch on interstate commerce, though. And so I think it's much more likely that an epidemic of some sort of disease would shut down interstate commerce than domestic violence. That's at least in my analysis of it. So, you know, I can kind of see where you might be able to tie in the Commerce Clause to that, and, you know, just an idea out there.
I can see something, and I know this is kind of tangentially related, but it makes me think of the fact that some vaccines don't necessarily prevent deadly diseases. And the question is, why would we bother to vaccinate against something that isn't fatal?
Right.
And a good example of that is adenovirus, which adenovirus, I've had it. I had it because Charlie got it and then gave it to me. And it sucks to have. I mean, it's no fun. It lasts a really long time. You feel awful. You get this terrible conjunctivitis with it. So your eyes are all red and goopy the whole time. You get these really high fevers. It's what Charlie had over Christmas a couple years ago.
Yeah.
It's no fun. But generally, you get through it okay, except for, you know, uncommon reactions. Most people pull through okay. But the military would sometimes vaccinate against adenovirus.
Yeah.
Because you could lose up to 2 or 3 weeks of productivity from people. And if that spreads through a barracks really quickly, which it can, it's very, you know, contagious, that's a whole whatever unit that can be knocked out. So that would be a reason to vaccinate, because it could devastate kind of your ability to perform your job, even though it wouldn't necessarily kill you.
Well, look at that from a economic analysis in the workforce, not maybe non-military, non-government, but just in general.
Mm-hmm.
If that spreads through some sort of industry or some business, and you have your entire
staff. It would affect commerce.
Out. Yeah.
Yeah. So not just your business, but all of them that would be affected. Yeah.
For sure.
Mm-hmm.
And plus, I don't want to get the adenovirus. That sounds horrible.
No, it is sound horrible.
No, it's no fun.
it's like the same thing with chicken pox. If you know, apparently, because I had it when I was a kid, I guess we didn't get vaccinated for chicken pox then.
Mm-mm, we didn't have one back then.
But now, you see, if you had chicken pox, you could get the shingles if you listen to TV. I don't want those shingles. Those things look bad. You ever seen that guy on TV who shows his shingles? Hey, they look bad. I don't want those shingles.
What are they, 20-year, 30-year architectural three-ply?
No, they're not even the good shingles. They're not like the ones on the roof. They're the ones on your butt or on your on your hip or your arm or something. It looks awful.
I don't want shingles on my butt.
No, they're very, I haven't had them, but my understanding is they're extremely painful.
They can be caused by stress too, right? Is that one of the...
So basically the chickenpox virus lives in your nerve roots and can kind of pop out at various times of your life. Stress can be a reason that it might be induced, or illness or surgery or trauma.
It's lurking in your nerve roots like a moray eel, waiting to spring out when you least expect it.
Exactly. Just like that.
It's pretty scary. Yeah.
It is scary, and it really is very painful.
It looks painful, that dude on TV. Mm-hmm. I don't ever want to have that stuff. Even Terry Bradshaw had it. He was a MVP in the NFL.
There's a vaccine against it.
There is?
Mm-hmm. Just a shingles vaccine, separate from the chickenpox vaccine.
Yeah, that's what they're probably advertising on the commercial, but I couldn't get past the looks of the shingles. I'd never heard what they said. I just kept saying, man, I don't want that.
Well, I like vaccines. I went to the health department and said, give me the works.
Give me everything?
Yeah. Well, tell
I'll
me
take
the,
everything twice.
Tell me the difference now. When I was a kid, you could tell, of course, I'm much older than you all, but when I was a kid, you could tell who'd been vaccinated because you were scarred for life from your vaccine.
Oh, on your arm?
Yeah. You had that divot in your arm or your back shoulder blade where they put it in.
Uh-huh.
And you don't see that anymore. Nobody has those marks anymore.
No. Are those, what were the, were those from smallpox vaccines?
Well, maybe it was. I don't know what it was. Your mother just tells you, sit still. You're going to get a shot, damn it. So you sit there and you get it. I don't know.
Because they've stopped doing that now. Mandatory smallpox vaccination.
Is that what that was? It left a scar, was the smallpox, you think?
Yeah, I think it definitely does.
That must have been it, because we all had it.
They still do that in the military, and you will see those scars.
Hmm.
Since it's essentially been eradicated, it exists.
In the United States?
No, all over the world.
Well, then why do we do the troops?
Because it exists in laboratories, and there is a sketchy history as to where the different, for a while it only existed in two laboratories in the world, but there is, it is theoretically possible that since one was in the USSR, that it is, who knows where it is.
Kim Jong-un probably has it. He's putting it in those big missiles he's shooting.
That's
up
the
in
concern
the air.
Is that we've lost track of where the vials of smallpox went.
Well, they are very small in their defense.
That's true. You could lose them very easily.
They wrote a song about it. Where have all the virus gone? Long time passing.
This is the part of the show where Tommy makes reference to a song that I don't know what he's talking about.
I don't remember that song. Mom used to sing it to
what
me.
What is it?
You don't know that one?
It's supposed to be Where Have All the Flowers Gone.
Yeah. And then Where Have All the Soldiers Gone? Mm-hmm. It was a 1960s Vietnam War protest song.
Yeah.
I think it was Joni Mitchell, somebody like that.
I don't know. Yeah.
One of those hippy dippy girls from that era.
So I wanted to actually read Justice Breyer's quote because I like the way this Justice kind of put this out here. He goes, "I'm just picking on something. I'd like to just, if it turned out there was some terrible epidemic sweeping the United States and we couldn't say that more than 50% or 50%, I can make the number as high as I want. But you'd say the federal government doesn't have the power to get people inoculated, to require them to be inoculated, because that's just statistical." And that's when the guy was like, no. Just the justice basically baited him into a question that he couldn't say no to, but he still said no to. Just because it was his point of view. So,
wow.
That's what they try to do, though. They try to like trick you with these questions when you get up there.
They're very tricky.
They are.
As part of being a lawyer, you learn tricks.
Well, there is some sort of, that's right. I have a whole bag of them. I keep them next to my money tree out behind my house.
That's right. Mm-hmm. He keeps them up his sleeve sometimes.
That scares us in our line of work over here.
A lawyerly trick?
Uh-huh. Yeah, doctors are very afraid of that.
Now, there is actually some power that the federal government does have under the Commerce Clause with regard to epidemics. And I want to talk about that, but first I think there might be a motion.
Yes, Your Excellency. We would like to approach the bench to pay court costs.
All right, approach. What do we have on the docket today, Tommy?
We have on the docket Sleep Number.
Sleep Number. I love Sleep Number.
Sleep Number mattresses, they have holiday special savings when it comes to holiday gifts. What could be better than giving the gift of better sleep?
Now, maybe you've considered a Sleep Number bed, but you thought you couldn't afford one. But who can afford a mediocre night's sleep?
I know I can't. Great news, Sleep Number beds are comfortable, adjustable, and affordable, with queen mattresses starting at only $899.99.
Let me ask you a question here, Tommy.
Ask me.
Did you know that 9 out of 10 couples disagree on mattress firmness?
I did not know that. I have never come across that.
Well, now you know. Sid, did you know?
I didn't know that.
Well, now you know. The Sleep Number bed lets you choose your ideal comfort and support on each side, so it's just right for both of you.
So get the firmness you want, huh? The newest Sleep Number beds are so smart, they automatically adjust, so you both stay sleeping comfortably throughout the night. Well, that's almost like sleeping on a robot. Do you think Sleep Number beds are a robot?
That
a mattress robot?
As comfortable.
No, I don't sleep on a mattress robot.
A very soft robot.
There you go. They even have an adjustment for snoring. Does your bed do that?
No, but my CPAP machine does.
Well, now Sleep Number beds are even more affordable with special financing for 48 months on all beds, including the new Sleep Number 360 smart beds, now through December 18th with a Sleep Number credit card, subject to credit approval. Minimum monthly payments required. Ask store for details.
I'll bet a Sleep Number 360 bed is a circular one. Do you think? Because then you can spin around 360. Maybe it not only adjusts your firmness while you sleep, but it also spins around in circles. Like one of those rotating restaurants?
I don't think so. I don't see a point in that.
Oh, okay. It was just a thought. Well, you know, you'll only find Sleep Number at any of the 550 Sleep Number stores nationwide. Visit sleepnumber.com to find the store near you. And be sure to tell them that Court Appointed sent you.
So now, prior to going into the court cost section of the show, I said that there's actually one federal law which allows some sort of immediate action upon an outbreak of an epidemic. And that is the Federal Quarantine Act under the Public Health Service Act, PHSA, and actually gives the federal government power to quarantine people in case there's some sort of epidemic.
Sure.
Can you guess what the justification was for the federal government to have the power to pass this?
The Black Plague.
Probably not in the U.S.
Well, I like your reasoning, but you need to go in a different direction. What is the constitutional basis for them to have the power to do this?
I haven't a clue.
I'll give you a hint. He handles the accounting at the North Pole.
Santa Claus? Oh, Commerce Clause.
Commerce Clause.
Oh, he handles the accounting. Oh.
Yeah.
Santa Claus is accountable, but Commerce Clause handles the accounting.
Public Health Service Act was passed using the Commerce Clause. So again, they said like an epidemic is related to interstate commerce.
Yeah, but usually something happens that triggers those kind of things. Was there some event that happened? Was there an outbreak of something, or was there the threat of some kind of chemical warfare or something like that?
Well, occasionally government is proactive. Not very often, but occasionally.
That's something new entirely.
You mean we're talking about progressive thinking?
Yeah.
That's really interesting. I assumed the same thing, that this probably came on the heels of some outbreak.
Now, it may have. I don't know. I didn't research it that much. I just saw the basis for it. I mean, it probably came after the sweaty tongue virus passed through the lower 48.
Well, we have had different times in history where some type of flu or another took out big, I don't mean killed, well, it did kill some, but it infected large portions of our population.
Absolutely.
Like the Hong Kong flu at one point was one of them or something? And
the Spanish flu epidemic, and we've had major influenza. Smallpox was one of the most common killers worldwide before it was eradicated.
I just want to go on the record saying, if there was a Hong Kong flu and they didn't call it Hong Kong flu-y, there was a major missed opportunity.
Well, that was, Hong Kong flu was first. I think it was before Hong Kong Louie.
Flu-y.
Right, Flu-y. But his Louie was later.
The dog that did Kung Fu, right?
Hong Kong Louie.
No.
His name wasn't Flu-y.
It was Fooey.
Hong Kong Fooey.
Fooey.
Oh, yeah. I knew it wasn't Flu-y. I was just saying the Hong Kong flu was before flu. I can't even say it now. Louie.
Tommy's tongue is getting sweaty.
I know.
And my tongue's getting sweaty now. I know what you mean.
And they're all just different strains of influenza, to be fair, which is probably the thing that if something was going to wipe us out, it seems very likely.
Well, do we
if
just
you
like,
think about things like that?
And do we just like to blame other countries? That's why there's a Hong Kong one and a Spanish one and stuff like that. We figure it's that other country did that. They came over and breathed their dirty germs over here.
Stuff gets named for where you first kind of define the outbreak and figure out like the species and that kind of stuff. So just wherever that happens, it gets named for. It's not necessarily where it originated. Sometimes it is. Some stuff is named for where it came from. But sometimes there are like little political battles over they don't want to name things. There was almost a virus called the Four Corners virus, named for the Four Corners area of the country.
So that's
four states touch because it came from that region. But there was a huge outcry because
it's going to ruin our tourism.
It's going to ruin tourism if there's a Four Corners virus. So there isn't now. It's called a hantavirus. But.
Oh, that's the one with rats, right?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
For a while, it was called the Sin Nombre virus because it was the no-name virus because nobody could agree on a name.
Yeah, after they discovered that, you couldn't play with rat poop anymore.
I was out in Wyoming, and we were on this ranch, and I found a deserted ranch house that was on part of this property.
Was it haunted?
No, it was not haunted, but I walked inside and was like, I don't think I'm going to go in here. I'm scared of hantavirus.
Yeah. Well, that's what happened. A bunch of dried mouse droppings, and then you sweep them up and inhale them.
Yeah. It may not be haunted, but it could be haunta.
It's true. So since there's not a federal law governing these things, basically what has happened is the states have passed their own legislation on requiring vaccinations in children. And I'm actually proud to say I think West Virginia might be leading the way on these issues. There's only three states that do not allow religious or philosophical exemptions for vaccinations. And pretty much the rest of them have religious or some sort of philosophical. Now, the other one, aside from West Virginia, is California and Mississippi. So
you got 49-50 and number one. That's interesting.
I know. It's always fascinated me because you'd think of it as a very progressive, from a scientific standpoint, it's a very progressive thing to say, no, there should be no religious, no philosophical exemption. You need to do it for the health of your child. In some way, it's kind of insinuating what we talked about earlier. Like, it's tantamount to abuse to subject your child to these unnecessary, possibly fatal illnesses if you can prevent them.
Or the public policy, like for the rest of, for the good of everybody else.
Exactly.
So it's almost like, you know, doing your duty as a American.
Or whatever. As a citizen.
There you go.
Yeah. No, I mean, it really is. It really is. And it seems like a very scientific, progressive thing. I've often wondered if that's true or if it's that other states have tried to be more progressive in terms of
not making everybody do it.
Yeah.
And allowing like, different thoughts and beliefs.
Like ideologically progressive as opposed to scientifically progressive, right. And that we're actually at the back of that line.
Yeah.
So what are you saying? All the other ones have lapped us and then they've come back around and they're behind us now because we're a lap behind, but we just won't say anything about it. We'll just keep running out there with Mississippi right beside us.
Let's pretend we're a front runner right by California.
That's what we're going to say. We're just in the lead.
All right. We're number 1 and 2 on this one instead of 49 and 50.
It really
Thank
is.
Thank God for Mississippi.
I know the state legislature took up at least last year, and they may have been previous years, that they tried to introduce a religious exemption in the state. And I know I have colleagues who went and testified to the committee. Like, you don't understand. There are so many measures that we are at the bottom of the barrel on.
Right.
This is one we can be proud of. This is one we can brag about. We are doing great when it comes to vaccination rates.
Yeah.
Do not ruin this.
Yeah, don't ruin this for us. Go drink your milk that you don't want to have pasteurized.
Yeah. The raw milk they passed around. They passed that law last year in the legislature.
Last year or 2 years ago?
2 years ago. They passed it that you could drink raw milk. And so to celebrate the passing of this bill, which why was that even worth their time? To celebrate it, they passed around raw milk to all the legislative members to drink, and half of them got sick. Way to go, West Virginia. You tried to do another good
one.
It's
so hard to explain to people, too, that it's not. I'll get a lot of people say, the flu vaccine is what I get the most pushback on. Most childhood vaccines, I will say in my practice, I do not get a lot of people saying, oh, we don't vaccinate or we don't want those. We don't believe in them. They're usually fine with them. The flu vaccine is more variable. I think people don't have as much faith in it. People don't think it works.
Well, they came out and said that 1 year that the vaccine is the wrong vaccine. It's really not going to do much good for you.
It's hard since the virus mutates so much, and every year it can be a little different. Part of it is guesswork. I mean, it's scientific guesswork, so we have reason to guess what we do. But this year, it's super effective. This year, it's around 80% effective.
If ever there was a year to get it, this is the year.
But even if it's only 14%.
Get two of them. Hell, while you're at it, might as well.
Well, but think about it. Even if it's only 14% effective, the alternative is zero protection.
Well, if you get two of them, it's 28% effective.
Well, they don't work that way.
Oh.
Yeah.
Darn.
But
like
people,
coupons, you can't add them up like that.
People always think we're like making a bunch of money off of them, and that's why we're pushing them on people. And I always want to say, most small doctor's offices, and even I don't even work at a small office. I work at a fairly large practice. We lose money on vaccines. We do not make money by vaccinating. I am not incentivized in any way to vaccinate you monetarily.
Well,
I do it because it's the best thing for you medically.
And like you can tell that because, I mean, there's a lot of places that give them away. There's times where I've gone to the Y and they're like, you want a free flu shot? Okay.
Well, it's like a economic loss leader approach. They're just trying to use those to get you in the door, then sell you on the undercoating, the finder's fee, and the other stuff. Well, how about
trying to charge you with other things?
Yeah,
upcharge.
Yeah. We'll get them in the door.
Now, do you want the deluxe edition?
We'll get them in the
this
door.
This one actually works.
Well, we can give you the flu shot, which is 14%, or we can give you the flu shot, which is 30%. Which one do you want?
Which one do you want? You want the good one?
You want the one that works or the one that just makes you feel better?
Now, you said something about, you're talking about the flu is the one you get pushback on, but not the one that children get. So what are the ones that children typically get?
There's a lot of them. There's the Haemophilus influenza B or HIB vaccine. There's diphtheria. There's pertussis, tetanus. We give measles, mumps, rubella, chickenpox, hepatitis A and B. There's a pneumonia vaccine, a meningitis vaccine. What else am I forgetting? Oh, I'm forgetting the HPV, the Gardasil vaccine.
But now that one's not mandatory.
That one is still not mandatory.
It's highly recommended.
Yes.
But not mandatory.
Not mandatory.
Those others you named are all mandatory?
Yes.
Okay.
The HPV one prevents what, cervical cancer? Is that the...
Exactly. Exactly. And it can prevent certain head and neck cancers. I always like to throw that in there because I get a lot of parents of boys who will say, well, but my son doesn't have a cervix. He doesn't need this. He does have a head and neck.
Yeah, that's the new medicine coming out. I read an article about that here recently, is that before they just thought that the HPV virus was for girls only. Mm-hmm. Now they're saying that boys should get it as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, under the whole the theory of herd immunity, I would think it would be a good idea to do
that. That's the best reason. Yeah, exactly, because of herd immunity. But there are cancers that people who do not have cervixes can get as well.
Yeah.
That it will protect against.
Every time you use that phraseology, I want to jump out and bring on the herd.
Herd immunity.
Yeah. Every time you say that, that's you know, however many years it's been since I went to Marshall, that's been bred into me. And even before that, because I went to all the games when I was a kid, an 8-year-old kid sitting in the stands, bring on the herd.
The only thing the herd's immune to this year is offense.
Well, that's true. They're immune to anything. One time when I was a freshman in college, I went up with a buddy that was at WVU, and we sat in the middle of the WVU section, and Boomer Esiason, this is how long ago it was, Boomer Esiason was the quarterback for Maryland, which most of you probably don't know who Boomer Esiason is because he's been retired from the NFL for so long.
Bengals quarterback.
Yeah.
Actually, I saw him play when you lived in Cincinnati. We went to a Bengals game. I saw him play.
Well, I watched him when he was a quarterback for Maryland.
Yeah.
And they came to WVU and played WVU and beat the pants off of them. And so by the third quarter, everybody in the student section was drunk and laying down, and nobody was cheering because West Virginia was losing so bad. And I stood up and you started yelling out, bring on the herd, bring on the herd. I about got us killed with the beer bottles and whiskey bottles and everything else and people coming over. I know. Well, we did a little imbibing too. So
Mountaineer Field is not the most friendly of places.
No, and they certainly don't like Marshall fans.
No.
Well, now, West Virginia, the code, which talks about vaccinations, is contained pretty much under 16.3.4. And there's some interesting things in here when I read through it. And this is one you might find interesting, Sid, is that if any physician shall give any person a false certificate of immunization against diphtheria, polio, rubella, rubeola, tetanus, and whooping cough, he or she shall be guilty of a misdemeanor and upon conviction shall be fined not less than $25 nor more than $100.
Wow. Which I bet was a lot for the time.
I don't know.
I don't know.
I think it's one of those slap on the wrist type things.
Yeah. Well, who certifies that you've been vaccinated? I mean, I guess, you fill out their record after you vaccinate
after
them.
After we vaccinate them.
So if you falsely fill out, like somebody said, look, I don't want my sweet little baby to get these shots. Will you just sign it so that the school doesn't give me any troubles? And so you sign it. You might have to pay no less than $25 and no more than $100.
You'd have a misdemeanor on your record, which you'd have to report to your licensing board, which could cause you some issues about you falsifying medical.
I think it should be even a bigger deal. I think it should be. Yeah, I mean, well, that's because you're putting everyone in danger. It violates one of our justice is one of our like primary medical ethical beliefs, and I think it would violate that
because it's
fraud and you're not providing for the common welfare. At that point, you are harming all of your potential patients.
I don't know if lawyers have justice as one of their tenets. We should probably add that.
Well, they take the hypocritical oath.
The hypocritical oath?
Yeah.
That's what the lawyers take?
No, the doctors.
Oh.
No, the doctors take a hypocritical one. And the lawyers take a hypocritical one.
Oh, okay.
I think that's the way it works.
Okay, here we go. Time to bash the lawyers.
No. You name, though.
It's always that time.
I forgot. Polio. That's one of the most important vaccines we've ever created, and I didn't name that. But.
There's no need to talk about it.
That's good. I like that. Do you know what? When Jonas Salk invented the polio vaccine, they asked him, and they knew that it worked, and they started using it. They said, are you going to patent it and like you could make a lot of money off this, you've saved lives, you're going to prevent, you know, all this illness. And he said, absolutely not, you can't patent the sun and give it out for free.
I don't think he was just using that as a loss leader to get him in the door so he could sell some of his tonic that cured everything.
Cure the sweating tongue. They say there's an aquatic version of it, and it's water polio.
That sounds horrible. Speedos everywhere.
That's right.
Polio was often spread in public pools and such. So,
well, there you go.
There's a little
water polio.
There's a little kernel of wisdom behind your
there you go. But so generally,
Marco,
not anymore.
Polio.
Because
Marco, polio.
No. There was a time that would have been very not funny.
Yeah.
Now we laugh about it because we don't see polio anymore. Thank you, vaccines.
Now you just worry about all those kids peeing in the pool.
Yes, and if that's your biggest worry, that's pretty good.
I don't want
to
pee
in my pool. There's a good argument for vaccines. Think about all the disease jokes it's going to open up.
Well, yeah,
once you get rid of the jokes, then you can. Once you get rid of the disease, then you can joke about them. You have to wait an appropriate period of time.
I mean, you know what? I can't argue because I do an entire podcast about that. So I think that's fair.
Now, the other thing, the other component of that, that West Virginia code is that a parent who refuses to permit a child to be vaccinated can be guilty of a misdemeanor too. And unless there's one of the exceptions, which they describe for medical reasons, and upon conviction, shall be punished by a fine of not less than $10 nor more than $50.
Oh, I think it ought to be an equal fine.
Well, they're just people. They're not rich doctors. Rich doctors with their $25 to $100.
Do doctors have money trees out back too? Like lawyers?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
They get two.
Two? Yeah, two money trees?
Is that how it works?
Another thing.
Unless they signed up for Medicaid.
Another thing, too, is that... prior to going to school, children have to be vaccinated as well, and they have to provide those records. So, I also thought if there's, you know, you have the compulsory education laws, if you fail to get your child vaccinated, therefore they can't go to school, then you might be opening up yourself to some more criminal liability for not getting your child educated.
Well, what about private schools?
There's actually an exception for private schools.
Yeah, they don't have to require it, do they? Because they're a private school. They can make up whatever rules they want.
Yeah.
They can they can infect them with diseases when they go there if they want to.
Well, but they still are required to under the West Virginia Code to have their child. It's just the school portion of it's not
enforced.
The parents are still required, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So
that's good. And I wouldn't send my kid to a school that didn't require that allowed for that, like no vaccination.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want my kids around kids who, a bunch of kids who weren't
all
vaccinated.
Those germy kids.
Well,
all those germy unvaccinated hooligans.
Because we also give vaccines at certain ages. So that's, for instance, whooping cough is on the rise again. Mm-hmm. And so we are encouraging adults to get their tetanus boosters because the tetanus booster now also has a whooping cough booster, pertussis, whooping cough in it. And the reason is that while as an adult that might not be as big a deal, if you're around an infant who is still receiving their series of vaccines and they haven't gotten all of them yet, they are vulnerable to whooping cough still. Hmm. So even if their parents are getting them vaccinated on time until they've gotten the entire series, you could give that baby whooping cough and that could be fatal. So
I came across one kind of interesting case, and it was about a divorced couple in Michigan, and they had divergent views on vaccinations. The mother actually had to serve jail time because she refused a judge's order to vaccinate her son. And so the boy's father went and had the shots administered while she was in jail. So it's kind of an interesting thought if you think about that. Like when you know people get divorced, they might have different beliefs and views on this, and it could cause some real issues because they both have decision making abilities to the medical care of their children. So
that would be a deal breaker for me in a dating scenario.
Yeah,
if I was dating somebody and I found out they were anti-vaccine, that'd be it. it'd be over.
Looking on Tinder and swipe left.
Is that the way you swipe?
I don't know. What is it, Mike?
I don't know. I'm not on Tinder.
You're single.
Well,
I thought all single people were on there.
I've been married since before Tinder came out, so I don't know.
I've been dead since before Tinder came out.
I have a serious girlfriend, though, that she'd probably frown upon me being on Tinder.
Oh, so you're just saying you're not admitting to it, not that you're not.
No, I'm saying I am not on Tinder.
You're not on Tinder?
No, you're not going to put words in my mouth. My tongue is not sweaty. Forget about it.
I heard that double negative in there.
I didn't say a double negative. You said a double negative.
I don't know. Sounds like you're getting slippery.
Nope. I think you're trying to rattle me, but you will fail.
I have some friends I could probably ask. I don't know if we really need to know.
We'll ask them which way to swipe.
Yeah, the judge told her that she had 7 days to get her child vaccinated, and she didn't. So he found her in contempt. So
well, she learned her lesson.
From my standpoint, I always think that's fine. I mean, I don't understand as a parent. A doctor, I don't get it, but especially as a parent, why would you not vaccinate your child?
Yeah.
I don't understand.
Oh, and the judge was a woman, so actually I said it's actually a she. It was a Judge Karen McDonald.
Mm.
So
it's my kind of judge.
Yeah. Some judges are hanging judges. She's a vaccinating judge.
She might have been married to Michael McDonald. She was taking it to the streets.
Oh.
That's Chicago, in case you didn't know.
I don't know about that one, Dad.
That obscure reference. Well, I've got something that I found extremely interesting.
Okay.
Did you know that if you feel that you had some type of a physical problem as a result of a vaccine, that you don't technically get to file a lawsuit about it?
No, I don't know.
Well, it seems that 30 years ago, federal law established that a court that is part of the U.S. Court of Federal Claims to remove injury cases from civil courts. There was a wave of lawsuits that had spooked vaccine makers and was threatening to cause vaccine shortages. So the law is the National Childhood Vaccine Injury Act of 1986, and it limited the legal liability of vaccine makers and created the National Vaccine Injury Compensation Program in the Department of Human Health and Services. This is a no-fault route for people injured by vaccines to win damages from a government trust fund that's financed by an excise tax on vaccines. Despite the law's title, adults too can win compensation. Since its first case in 1988, the vaccine court has adjudicated more than 16,000 petitions and dismissed two-thirds of them. To the successful petitioners and their lawyers, it has awarded about $3.6 billion. The system has attracted scores of attorneys who are paid hourly legal fees up to $430, and regardless of whether a claim succeeds. The court's website lists 195 lawyers nationwide who are willing to take vaccine cases, although petitioners can hire others. Many are clearly in search of their piece of the $3.7 billion sitting in the trust fund today.
I had no idea about that.
So, wow. And that's, you know, like I say, it's to protect the companies making vaccines, because if they were tied up in court and they were settling multi-million dollar, mm-hmm. you know, judgments and everything. So they set the judgments on there.
That's almost kind of like a sovereign immunity type argument as to why they wanted to do that. So it's you know, kind of for the benefit of everybody.
Well, that's mm-hmm. what I say. Isn't that back to your public interest type thing is what they're saying? Is that it could have
policy reason for that.
Yeah, negative impact on public policy.
Right.
And now this one lawyer she's one of these lawyers that represents this, but she says that even though she does represent people doing that, she says vaccines keep us healthy. They eradicate disease. If I had children, I would get them vaccinated. And she's one of the lawyers that represents people that are injured. But here's what they say is that for every million vaccine doses eligible for compensation that are distributed in the decade beginning in 2006, the court compensated one injury victim. Depending on the gravity of the disease in question, receiving a vaccine is on the order of magnitude less dangerous than staying unvaccinated. The tetanus vaccine that this particular lawyer had first brought to her attention that she received causes a life-threatening allergic reaction in at most 0.0006% of the people who get the shot. The U.S. case fatality rate from tetanus, if you can contract tetanus, is 13.2%. Mm-hmm. And if you get it, 13.2% people die.
I usually have like about once a year, I ask myself, oh, geez, when's the last time I had my tetanus shot? Because I've done something that makes me think I need one. One time I cut my finger on a piece of metal when I was ripping something out of the house. And I was like, well, I think I had it last year. I don't know. And then the next day, I think I started like feeling some mental things. I was like, I think my jaw's tightening up. It's like, oh gosh, I gotta go. I ran and got a tetanus shot because I was petrified.
You're better than most people. I usually ask, when was your last tetanus shot? And people look at me like, I have no idea what you're talking about.
Well, I don't know. I fall and hurt myself a lot.
Now, in one of the things that's one of the big arguments that has to do with vaccines is there's the group of people that believe vaccines are associated with autism.
Right. They're
I'm sure you've heard
liars and frauds.
Yeah, yeah, that they've done that, even though there's no medical evidence to prove that.
Absolutely.
In 2010, the court declined to award compensation in an omnibus proceeding that grouped more than 5,000 autism claims. Such petitions continue to fail. One typical recent opinion read, the factual record simply does not support petitioner's contention that the MMR vaccine had any connection to the autism spectrum disorder diagnosis.
And that's basically related to that one report that spawned all this, isn't it, Sid?
Andrew Wakefield was the now discredited doctor who did the study that was false and has lost his license and isn't practicing and has been completely discredited. But the damage that he did, it's still ongoing.
Yeah.
And it's fueled by, you know, celebrities who take this up periodically. And I think a lot of people who autism, we still don't understand very well. And so, and it can be very scary and overwhelming, I'm sure, as a parent, if that's, you know, if that's what your child has and you're trying to come to grips with that and understand it and you want somebody to blame.
You want somebody to blame? You want to know why, too.
Mm-hmm.
Why my child? What could I have done different or what could be done different or something like that? And so, you know, that's one of the conclusions they come up with, whether it's real or not.
And people like Andrew Wakefield really took advantage of that fear and you know, preyed on those parents.
It said, you know, there are identifiable injuries that come from vaccinations. And it's usually because the vaccination has been administered wrong. It says that there are claims that have been paid. The federal government has paid millions of dollars to vaccine-injured children with autism. It does not say, though, that the federal government has paid millions of dollars to vaccine-injured children because of their autism. The federal government's vaccine compensation fund has also paid lots of money to children who end up being left-handed. But that doesn't mean the vaccines cause their left-handedness.
That's a very good...
That's the way they did it.
Yeah.
The most common injury from a vaccine is a shoulder injury. And it says because there's a group of nerves in there, mm-hmm. and that if you administer the vaccine too high, you can hit that group of nerves, and it can actually cause problems.
Sure.
And so there's this outline of things that you have to meet, that it had this numbness and pain, it lasted for more than 6 months, it was certified by doctors at certain levels, mm-hmm. and then you can go to this court with all that paperwork filled out, and it's not even like you argue it like in a law, a court or anything like that. You have all this paperwork when you go in.
Check the boxes.
Yeah, check the boxes, everything's there, the doctor signed off, everything's there, and they say $50,000. That's what the going rate for a shoulder injury is from a vaccine, $50,000. Now, that doesn't mean you're permanently disabled.
No.
Because it just means it had to have lasted 6 months. Now, after 6 months, you get your paperwork worked out. You get your $50,000. My shoulder feels great.
And I would argue that if the worst you got was your shoulder hurt for 6 months, if you still don't get any of the diseases we just talked about, you don't get diphtheria or measles or polio or whatever, you're probably better off.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I think I'd rather have my shoulder hurt for six. If that's the risk you're taking.
I don't know what diphtheria does to you, but I don't want it.
You don't want any of these things.
No.
And I think I've heard a lot of people with autism and parents of people with autism say this, too. So vaccines absolutely do not cause autism. There is zero link. That being said, even if there was, wouldn't you rather take that risk? What are you saying that it's really worse to have a child with autism than it is to die of a preventable childhood infectious disease?
Yeah.
It's incredibly offensive to people who are living with autism, if you think about it that way.
Yeah.
Again, there is no connection, but even if there was, it's still an incredibly offensive and mm-hmm. ridiculous statement.
You know, it started back up in 2015, this round of politicians at the state level crying for mandatory vaccinations, that it be required, and then it died down. But you know what caused that? Do you remember the measles outbreak at Disneyland?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's what caused it, when that broke. And all these people came down with measles, and they associated with people that had not had measles vaccines in Disneyland. And so then they tried to start it back up. Well, only one that ended up getting it out of that, because West Virginia and Mississippi already had it. California, that's what pushed them to do it. And, of course, where's Disneyland?
Right.
Oh, yeah, it's probably the basis behind it.
Most visible, yeah. So then they jumped on board.
I think they had a high unvaccinated rate prior to that, didn't they?
Probably. I think so.
I think they were suffering from fairly high. And you can chart a population, and once you drop below that percentage that creates herd immunity, you start seeing outbreaks. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, that's what happens.
It's mathematical.
It really is. It's science.
You know,
it's real.
In that court, there's certain caps on what you can get. And like when I read that, and I read about the shoulder injuries, and you get $50,000, I'm thinking, that's a lot of money for a sore shoulder for 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
But when I looked at the cap, there was one that involved a 4-year-old child that died after a vaccine.
Mm.
Their family received $250,000. That was the cap on that. So then I say, wow, that's not nearly enough.
And it was probably because it was administered wrong. So that's probably an extra recovery they got in addition to the doctor who negligently probably...
You don't even have to prove it's administered wrong.
No, but what I'm saying is, you said most of these claims are from people, ones that are administered wrong. So assuming that this was one that was administered wrong or improperly, then you also have a negligence cause of action against that doctor or the hospital or the practice that did it. So not necessarily saying that all they got was $250,000.
Oh, you're saying they might have got it from other
sources. That's the only source. That source they got $250,000 from. I bet they got more from other places as well.
But I was just saying that the point in this court is, you don't have to prove that it was administered wrong. If they got the vaccine on Monday and they died of on Tuesday and they couldn't really find any reason why they died, it's just assumed that that's all you have to show.
Right.
You don't have to show anything else. You don't have to prove that anybody did anything wrong. So,
yeah.
I don't know. I mean,
you had said that earlier in the article that most of them were from improperly administered ones, though.
Sure.
Right. So. Yeah. That's where the shoulder injury ones come from.
Probably
yeah.
Basically, the reason for a cause of death would be one that was.
And they basically say it's not worth arguing about.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no, you're never going to convince anybody. The ones that believe you shouldn't get it are never going to change their mind.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's one of those 50-50 issues, although luckily it's not 50% of the population.
No.
But the ones that believe, you know, it's like gun laws, it's like abortion laws, you know. Whatever people believe, you're not going to change their mind for the most part. They're going to believe what they're going to believe.
It's really hard, though, because with vaccines, there's no other side to the issue in terms of factually or scientifically. You can have the opinion that you don't want to get vaccines or you don't believe in them, but that's all just faith and belief. There is zero evidence that they're right. Like, there's only one side. The vast majority of the scientific and medical community all says the same thing. Vaccines are safe and effective. Yes, absolutely, you should get them, unless, like I said, there are certain reasons we have told you not to. There is no other side. So when I get frustrated, sometimes in the media it's presented as like, which side of the vaccine debate are you on? There's no other side. There's the right answer, and then people who are wrong and vocal. And that's it.
There you have it. That's the right answer. That's all you need to know.
Vaccines are great.
Forget the rest.
It's true.
Well, that's going to bring us to...
Sydney, join in.
Legal breeze.
You didn't know about that.
I didn't know I wasn't ready.
You gotta be ready.
Okay. Be ready at all times.
Do we want to do it again?
All right.
Okay.
You know what? It's time for
legal breeze.
So legal breeze is the part of the show where we ask questions about different legal terms that we talked about. Usually, I ask Tommy some questions, and I might even ask you a question or two today, Sid.
Uh-oh. Okay.
We can help each other out, Sid.
And I think Tommy might even have a question as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, what in the Constitution would possibly allow the federal government to make vaccinations mandatory for everyone in the country?
It's Santa's brother.
The Commerce Clause.
That's right.
Yeah.
Because it relates to interstate commerce. That's just one possibility. I mean, it does relate to that emergency quarantine type thing. So I just think if the next logical extension of that might be to be preventative of it. So anyway, mm-hmm. It's my thought. I have a question. Can you opt out of immunizations in West Virginia because of your religious belief? Anyone?
No.
No.
No, you can't.
No, by God.
Yay.
And Sid, if you were going to falsify a vaccination record for a patient, what would you be facing if punished here in the state of West Virginia?
Well, I would never do that. But if I did, it would be a misdemeanor and it would be a $25 to $100 fine.
That's right. But you would never do that.
I would never do that.
Yeah, I think you would be the least likely doctor of anyone I know, doctors I know, to possibly. Well, actually, I don't know any doctor that would do that. So
yeah. Yeah. I don't either. I'm sure they're out there, but I don't either.
Who's the guy from The Simpsons?
Oh, Dr. Nick.
Is hey, that everybody.
Yes.
Dr. Nick might do it.
He might do it.
Well, Tommy, do you have a question for Sid?
In what year was the National Childhood Vaccine Injury Act passed?
Oh, man. It was in the 80s.
86.
Correct.
Good job.
See, they did it when Taylor was born. That was the year Taylor was born.
That's a good way to remember it.
Yeah. There you go.
Well, I thought you had one more question for Sid based on a hypothetical situation.
Oh, yeah. That's right. That's not really a legal brief. This is...
It's kind of I thought you were going to put her on the spot.
Yeah, this is a hypothetical situation that was written in on our Facebook site.
It was by Caitlin Brooks Samuelson. She posted this and she had a question.
And this was an actual situation where a guy is brought into an emergency room, unconscious, and he's failing, looking like he's going to, you know, code, and tattooed across his chest is do not resuscitate with his signature under it.
I heard about this.
What do you do?
That's
do you
tough.
Resuscitate That's... or do you let him go?
So currently there's a whole New England Journal article about this that I have not, it's saved in my files to read. I haven't read it yet.
Yeah, well, there you go.
Asked the right person.
Yeah.
Currently, I do not believe we consider tattoos official medical documentation at this point. So I think you have to, if you do not have a surrogate or a medical power of attorney or a piece of paper that says what this person would want, I think you have to err on the side of saving their life and figuring it out later.
What if somebody had their blood type tattooed on them very visibly and they needed an infusion drastically, like quickly? Stat! That's what you say, right?
Yeah, exactly. We do.
Do you think you could rely on that?
I think legally speaking, I don't think you can. I mean, it's not, a tattoo is not a legal document. You have to assume it's probably right.
Well, how long does the test logically take to test what blood?
It doesn't take very long to type somebody. So we can do that emergently, it's probably right, because why would you get the wrong blood type tattooed on you? But
now you said
I would not want to take that chance.
A tattoo is not a legal document. What if I had the Constitution tattooed on me?
Well, it might be a legal document, but it's not your legal document.
It's everyone's legal document, Tommy.
That was inspirational.
Now, here's the thing, though. Okay, in this case that you're talking about, that's pretty much what they said, because what they said was they'd rather err on the side that's reversible.
Yes.
Because if you let him go and he dies and it wasn't any good, you can't reverse that. And but if you keep him alive and find out you shouldn't have, you can reverse that pretty much. You can unplug him.
Well, that is, and that's actually always the answer, because we talk about this a ton in medical school I continue to in my practice, medical ethics. When is somebody DNR and when are they not? And what do you do if you're not sure? And you always err on the side of resuscitation if you're not sure. You always err on that side.
Well, what ended up happening, this is a spoiler alert since you hadn't read the article, but but they finally got a name on the guy. They didn't have a name when he came in. They finally got a name on him, and they found records at another hospital, and he had a legal DNR on file at another hospital. So at that point, they didn't revive him, and he ended up passing. That's what they say when you want to say it nice instead of to say he died.
That's unfortunate. But that is a good reminder. I mean, we talk about it with patients a lot, that tattoos, that's great. That's certainly tattoo whatever you want on your body, but also take the time to, you know.
Now, see, my thought
get an MPOA,
is
make a living will, make a.
Sure, that's the best way. But my thought is that this guy has been through it once and he didn't want to be resuscitated. Somebody resuscitated him. So he said, by God, I'm not going to let this happen again. And he had somebody sit there with a needle, because this was in big letters. This wasn't small. This went from one shoulder to the other shoulder.
I've
do not
image,
resuscitate.
Yeah.
So I think he was pretty adamant in what he wanted. He didn't want to be brought back. So he thought, by God, I'll put it right there for him to see, and I'll sign. I don't know how you signed that himself. The guy had to have forged his signature.
Well,
I don't
yeah.
think he could have done it yourself. That'd be hard to do.
Well, you could sign it and they can imprint, they can put that on, right? Like you could sign a
trace
piece of paper and they
trace
can
it.
Like stamp it on your skin.
I guess
there's
so.
A way to do that.
Yeah, I guess so.
Because I've seen them transfer
but it's not really
stuff
you doing
onto
it.
Your skin and then they trace it with the, well, that's true.
That's like those fancy people that have a stamp with their signature on it when they stamp something, you know?
Yeah.
Like but, a seal with wax and a signet ring?
Well, not exactly. I'm in a fancy stamp.
Where you drip wax and you put your ring and it's like.
That would be cool.
Yeah. Add a little blood into it to make it real.
I demand you compensate my client forthwith. Very truly yours, Michael Meadows.
Don't crack the seal. But anyway, I just thought that if he's got it tattooed, by God, he's serious this time. Don't bring me back, damn it.
Yeah, but again, if you're not sure, you err on that side. I've heard of people who even have it tattooed upside down on their chin. DNR. Because then the position we're in when we intubate somebody is we're standing behind them and we tilt their head back. And so you would see DNR right across their chin in front of you as you were about to insert the tube to intubate somebody.
I would think.
But that still doesn't count. I mean, that still doesn't.
What if his name was Daniel Nicholas Reynolds and he just had his
initials
tattooed there?
Well, and I mean, you joke, but that's really the kind of stuff that you start to wonder. Like, well, I don't want to misinterpret.
Right.
I was thinking like on, what is it, like on an ambulance where they have it written backwards across the hood?
You
have
yes.
it written backwards across your butt or something like that. Do not resuscitate.
They don't resuscitate you down there.
Yeah.
Depends on what you're dying from.
It's not where the tube goes.
That's not part of CPR.
Well, mouth to mouth isn't going to work. Got to turn them around.
No.
We're going to end on that note.
Yeah, that's good.
Sid, thanks for being a guest today.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was fun to be here.
And if you don't already, which I don't think we have any listeners that didn't probably come from Sawbones already, but Sydney, of course, can be found on Sawbones with her husband, Justin McElroy.
Well, thank
you,
Dad.
And you guys are going to be doing a live show pretty soon, right?
That's true. This weekend at PodCon.
You're doing another one in Huntington as well, right?
That's right. And Candle Nights on December 21st. Right?
21st or 22nd? Is it Friday or
what's
Saturday?
What's the Friday?
Friday is the 22nd.
Yeah.
22nd.
Yeah, because Christmas
December 22nd.
Eve is the 24th.
I couldn't remember the day. December 22nd. Yes, we are. It's sold out, though.
I know.
It is sold out.
I feel
out.
Really bad about that.
It's sold
but
out
we'll
really
be
quick,
there.
Too.
Yes.
You know, the one That's thing that I thought was really good I wanted to talk about, too, is that Riley did a GoFundMe page, and I think there's some links floating around out there. There's one on the Court Appointed page where basically you can get a star put on a tree to mm-hmm. be on the Candle Night stage if you make a donation, I think, right?
That's right. That's right. We it's a fundraiser. Riley organized it for Big Brothers and Big Sisters of South Central West Virginia because they received a $20,000 grant to help in outreach and education for LGBTQ youth. And as a result of that, some of their biggest donors pulled their donations to the tune of, I think, $80,000. And so it severely impacted this program, and they weren't going to be able to provide certain services. So anyway, that all the donations will go to them.
And I wanted to give a special shout out to Brian Gregory. He was the first one to donate on the GoFundMe.
Hey.
And he said, hey, I was first. And I think he saw it on the Court Appointed
yeah,
Facebook
the
page.
Yeah, yeah. You know, Court Appointed person was
oh,
first
that's
one.
Nice.
We appreciate it.
A special shout out, Brian Gregory.
But as
you
of,
you'll get your star.
You'll
handwritten.
Get a star too.
As
yeah.
of right
by
now.
Riley.
Handwritten by Riley.
As of right now, between the ticket sales from the show and the donations of the stars, that will be given about over $35,000 mm-hmm. to the. Big Brothers, Big Sisters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So people
news.
Have been wonderful. Thank you. If you've donated to anybody listening who
thank you, thank you, thank you.
Yes.
Yeah,
it's amazing.
Thank you very much. So
your generosity overwhelms us
every time they do.
Mm-hmm. It's a great group.
Mm-hmm.
It is. All right.
Thanks, Sid.
Thank you
Sid.
All.
Thanks to everybody for listening. And thanks to MCRB for use of their song, Doctor, Lawyer, Indian Chief.
And thanks to the McElroy Stable of Podcasts for the use of their recording studio. Their podcasts include Mabim Bam, Sawbones, and Still Buffering, as well as many other fine offerings. And please, take the time to rate and review us on iTunes, especially if you liked us. If you didn't, well, then not so much.
You're not supposed to say that.
You always edit that out, though, right?
Usually.
Good.
This has been Court Appointed. I'm Mike Meadows, your co-host. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurf, and I'm just a dude.
Thanks for listening.